What you call an icon living? Start a record label, Miss Fish just did it. Ooh. Nylon, cover 5 minutes. Whoa, we are too hot in the business. Ooh. About to make a movie independent. Ooh. Need new trucks independent. Ooh. I need you to listen to the vision. Ooh. All your verses sound like dirty dishes. I'm about to clean them in the kitchen. Ooh. And we making money by the minute. Ooh. I'm about to do a way different. God, I am just an icon living.
I am just an icon living. Living. Icon living. I am just an icon living. I am just an icon.
This episode of the Iconic Podcast is brought to you by Iconic Clothing Co. You can check out all their shirts on the website, iconicclothingco.com. You can also check out the Instagram page. A new shirt just got released this week, and it looks mighty fine. So be sure to do that. Check out the website. You can follow us on Twitter, at the Iconic Pod, and then you can follow Luke Domes, LJD_80, and you can follow me, at Bo Templin, on Twitter. On this episode, we get our first guest. Daniel Schmidt called in. We had a great conversation. 40 minutes long of just great Mizzou sports talk, really. And you know, I had never met the guy, which was really funny. I didn't realize that you didn't know that.
Yeah, really never crossed my mind, actually.
not that it really mattered. Regardless, we had a great conversation. We got to talk a ton of Mizzou football, breaking down the schedule. Even got to highlight the Mizzou basketball season coming up. A little bit of college football here and there, and then just casual conversation that kind of comes with, you know, a 40-minute phone call and all that. I guess without anything left, you know, KG, King Goon, Daniel Schmidt, the host of the Talking Schmidt podcast. We can go to his conversation right now. Iconic Podcast is very happy to be welcoming in our first guest. He is a man with many nicknames. He needs no introduction, but we're going to give him one anyways. You may know him as Daniel Schmidt. You may know him as KG or King Goon. TSP, Daniel Schmidt from the Talking Schmidt podcast joins the show, the Iconic Podcast. Hey, we're really happy to have you, Daniel.
Guys, first off, that introduction is the nicest thing anyone has said about me in a very long time. Second off, this collaboration, this interview, whatever you want to call it, this is long overdue. So I'm really, really thrilled to be on a board here at the Iconic Podcast.
Oh, absolutely. And obviously, there's no better way to get started with it than, of course, you know, talking Mizzou football, which starts in 48 hours pretty much. And there's no better place to start talking Mizzou sports than with you. So we had to have you on.
Right. And I really appreciate that. Mizzou football, it's funny. It's one of those things where people talk about you know, Mizzouing things. Like there's ways that Mizzou loses or lets us down that are unique to Mizzou. But I've been going over the schedule and going over recent history, and I'm feeling very good about this year. I'm cautiously optimistic, yes, but I think a lot of things are really lining up for Mizzou to get to 8 wins at least.
But didn't we say that last year?
Well,
We did
say that last year. I think both verbally and financially.
Right.
we were committed to 8 wins, and as we know, the schedule last year was really weak. They go 7-5. And really, you look at Kentucky, that should have been a win. On paper, Purdue should have been a win despite being blown out by 5 touchdowns. Yeah,
Purdue was without a doubt the worst loss from last season.
Oh, it's not even close. In terms of my, off the top of my head, the only loss that would come close in terms of just like a damning loss would have been the Indiana loss. I think your guys' freshman year, my junior year, that was really bad.
Yeah.
But that might have been just the effect of so many Indiana kids who didn't want to go to Mizzou,
traveling to Columbia, and something about their presence might have tipped the scales in their advantage. Purdue, there's really no excuse. That was brutal. But you guys are right. Last year, the expectations were more than 7 wins, to be sure. But this year, I've just been staring at the schedule for now, like 72 straight hours, and I feel good about it.
All right. So, I mean, we've got a couple things we could do. I would like to run through the schedule with you at some point here. He did say it.
We'll give him to that. Sorry to cut you off, Bo, but I want to, since you mentioned the schedule, let's just ask you right away. Outside of, you know, Georgia comes here week 4, the number 3 ranked team in the country, and we go to Bama in week 6, I want to say. Outside of those two games, is there a game on the schedule you are circling just as a way to for yourself to be like, okay, this is different than years past? Because last year when the Purdue game came around, I was like, we should win this game handily. We're at home. We hadn't been playing well, but we should beat Purdue. I don't care if Purdue's the best team in the nation. An SEC program like Mizzou should beat Purdue. And last year they get stomped against Purdue. So is there a game on the schedule that's going to kind of give you the excitement level back of, dang, maybe Mizzou's back on track and Berrio's got us going the right direction?
Right. So it's a domino effect, right? So you look at Purdue again this year, we're talking in the 2018 year, and the entire season is predicated upon Mizzou winning that game. I don't feel like that's a hot take or really exaggerating anything. You go there, you win that game, you're 3-0, and it is a bit of a trap game. You're going to West Lafayette, which is one of the absolute just armpits of America. You go there and you lose. Now you're 2-1, and home for Georgia, at South Carolina, at Bama. You're talking 3 straight games where you are going to be an underdog, at least to be on the spread. And it gets really, really tough. There's a chance, I don't think it will happen, but there's a chance you could go 2-4 if you don't take care of business in West Lafayette. I don't think that's going to happen, but the Purdue game is the game, at least the first game I have circled. But assuming everything goes according to plan there, that is a game Mizzou should win. The game I have circled is at South Carolina. I going over the schedule, I see 6 wins and 2 losses, pretty much like should be wins, should be losses. I talked about this on TSP actually, and the 4 games that are up in the air for me are South Carolina, Tennessee, Arkansas, and Florida. If you go 2-2 there, that gets you to 8-4, and I feel good about how the season went. But the South Carolina game, to answer your question in like half an hour, the South Carolina game is the game that I have circled.
So, you know, they're bringing in Derek Dooley, the new offensive coordinator.
Right.
It's one of the big changes, at least from last year. But really, the concern from last year wasn't necessarily on the offensive end. I mean, Drew was still throwing for the SEC leading touchdowns. How much better can they really be on the offensive end with him stepping in?
Right. I'm glad you asked that, because I actually posed that question a few weeks ago to my buddy Aaron Reese, who now just stopped the Mizzou beat to take over the Texans beat for The Athletic. But I asked him about that. Like, I don't know why people are keen on this Derek Dooley thing. And I guess Dooley told him, I don't know if it came up in an article or if they were just talking off the record or whatever. But I guess Dooley said to him that, like, you know, last year in conference, the points per game was like 17 or something like that. And there were turnovers abound. And he was like, so you're telling me that I just have to take this team that was scoring 17 points a game in conference and turning over the ball at least once, if not twice a game, I have to do better than that? That is the mark I have to clear. I don't feel like that's going to be too difficult. So that kind of put a smile on my face, because, you know, we all love Drew Locke, and he put up those outrageous numbers last year. But, you know, if you take away UConn, Vanderbilt, and Missouri State, that was like, I'm not kidding, it was something like 18 touchdowns right there. So that's 26 over, like, the other 9 games, which is still great. Drew's phenomenal. But I think we kind of lose sight of the fact from time to time that there is still room for growth. I'm certainly someone who's done it a million times, but I do think this offense can and will be better than they were last year. If not because of Dooley coming in or whatever else, then just because they're going to bring back truly an absurd amount of weapons on offense.
Right. I was just about to mention that. The offense is absolutely loaded. He's got Lockett quarterback, Larry Roundtree and Demaryius Crockett are in the backfield tandeming together. You got one of the maybe up-and-coming weapons that if he continues on his track of progressing, Big Al. Albert, I didn't know how to say his last name.
I'm
thinking with Big Al.
Say
it. Do you know how to say it?
Just I just say Al. Don't we all just say Albert O? It reminds me of Michael.
Yeah, I'll just
Owen
say
Allen.
Albert O, Big
Michael
Al, whatever.
Owen,
it is. Yeah, exactly. Regardless, he's going to be an NFL prospect that any NFL GM is going to be drooling over just because of his size, his quickness, and his ability to get open and make plays right in the open field after the catch. And they also have Nate Brown, Jonathan Johnson, Emmanuel Hall returning at wide receiver, and one of the sneaky good offensive lines, I think, in the country, period. They protected Drew pretty well in the second half of the season last year. And for me personally, I think the Derek Dooley conversation kind of revolves around just Drew Lock personally. I think that Mizzou, for me at least, I love the spread. I grew up loving the spread. In high school, we ran a heavy run-first offense, and I was a wide receiver. I just wanted to play spread football. But there were times last year when you're trying to throw the ball 15 yards down the field and then hurrying it up and then get an incomplete pass and then try to run it up the middle, no gain. And all of a sudden you're in a 3rd-and-9 situation. How many times last year were we in 3rd-and-9 and Drew Lock was scrambling trying to make a play? You know, I just kind of feel like sometimes last year Mizzou got off track on offense just because they couldn't get any momentum going, because the spreads only work when you have momentum, when you're hitting first downs, when you're tiring out the defense. So you're right. I'm very interested to see what Derek Dooley definitely does this year. On the other side of the ball, not a lot's been said about the defense. I got to ask you, what do you know about this defense outside of Terry Beckner Jr.?
I know we've got the Texas transfer coming in whose name eludes me at the moment, but I think he's going to be great on the D-line with him as well. And we've got, again, I'm not great with the defense myself. The linebacker who's been there forever, it feels like, Cole Garrett, I believe his name is.
Cole Garrett.
Yeah, just a classic, prototypical middle linebacker. That's the type of guy I like as my captain of the defense. What I don't like, obviously, is what's been talked about to some extent, is that there's so much youth in the secondary. I'm a big secondary guy. I think that more so than how the D-line getting to the quarterback can make their lives easier. I think that there's such an importance in that secondary role just for a variety of different reasons that people could write books about. And I don't love that we're going to have so much youth and inexperience last year. I know that's being spun as it's great to have these new legs and these guys, whatever else, back there. But I don't feel great going up against these SEC offenses having youth and inexperience back there. Even if the SEC isn't known as a prolific passing league, I think that it is a league with phenomenal coaching, and coaches are going to take advantage of 19-year-olds with no experience.
King Goon, quick question. Actually, hold on. Before I guess I even move, where does King Goon come from? Where does – I'm a nickname guy, so I appreciate – I love a good nickname.
Oh, that's a really good nickname.
Really curious about how the name Goon or King Goon came about.
So it would have been the summer going into my junior year of high school. I was playing slaba baseball for a team called the Tigers. The team was actually pretty good. I think there were 11 guys on the roster. 8 of them played varsity baseball. And one of them didn't play baseball in high school at all, and I was that one. I was really there to be a glue guy. I was Kendrick Perkins. I was Kendrick Perkins.
Bo and I love to do we like to compare our basketball games. Whenever we play in pickups, it's can you give me an NBA
player comparison?
Player comparison. What were you, Kendrick Perkins? You're gonna sell yourself that short?
Yeah, but you can, people forget Kendrick Perkins, McDonald's All-American once upon a time. So in my
NBA
when
champion.
I was
you're gonna play
NBA champion. So when I was really young, I was good, but as time went on, I was just better at basketball and stopped playing baseball with any seriousness. So I was a glue guy, and so I was like, for example, we were playing a team once called the Gamers, and the Gamers are your classic, feeder type program where these kids and parents spend thousands of dollars and invest all these hours traveling around the country in high school to ultimately go play D3 baseball. And so we're playing these guys in the summer, and it's like their second year of existence, and they're like the premier program in St. Louis. And I know I'm not going to play. Like, when I would play, I'd play the last inning of a game in, like, right field if somebody, like, needed a breather, I had to go pitch, whatever. So I know I'm not going to play. So before the game, like, there's no point in me even warming up. So before the game, these guys are taking infield. And I swear to God, I got out of our dugout, and I took off my shirt, and I started doing push-ups along the first base line. And, you know, our coach is obviously appalled. You know, I cranked out, like, I don't know, like probably 25 in like 10 seconds or something like that. Who knows? Who knows the numbers? But I probably not true. But, yeah, I cranked out these push-ups. Our coach freaked out on me. Get the, you know, get back on the dugout, you asshole. Like, you know, we don't do that on this team. And my buddy, Corey Cannon, goes, Schmitty, you are such a goon, dude. Oh, my God. And I think I responded something to the effect of, like, you know, Corey, I kind of view myself more as, like, king of the goons. And just like that, for me cranking out these push-ups before, before a baseball game, emerged king goon.
That is absolutely beautiful.
I love a good nickname with a better backstory.
Oh, that is so good.
Yeah, it's got a good genesis, and I apologize for taking again half an hour to tell that story.
Hey,
but
we got nothing but time. My weekend's already started. I'm good. To go.
The weekend has already started, and I'm not going to go into the full backstory on this one. But a nickname I picked up, tongue in cheek, that I haven't enjoyed so much, but my friends really enjoy, is people have started calling me D-Man over the last couple of years, and I don't like it because it lacks any and all creativity, and they all know that, and they know I don't like it, and so as a result,
so
knowing I don't like
more.
It, they right. All that does is causes them to say it more, and my roommate Adam Lowe was the one who brought it back to Columbia at the start of my fifth year, and next thing you know, all these younger people who are working at my house with me started calling me D-Man. To the point now where I don't even know if people know what the D stands for when they see me. I think some people just view me as no last name, no first name, just D-Man. I just had to have that story out there as well, just so people know that it's not all good things when it comes to nicknames for Daniel Schmidt.
Schmitty, or King Goon, or Goon, whatever you want to be called. Between Crockett and Roundtree, how do you expect that to be played out? I mean, both of them now have a little bit of experience under their belts. You know, each of them that will have a time and place to prove themselves. How do you think that ends up working out?
Right. So I'm trying to think back off the top of my head. The running back tandem we had 3 years ago, I think the second year we won the East, which, again, would have been your freshman year. I forget who those guys were. If you said it, I would know. And I'm going to get drilled for not remembering their names. But those two guys were great. And I love – more so in college than the NFL.
Russell Hansbrough.
No longer. Thank you. Russell. It was Russell Hansbrough, and he had a counter as well. I think Russell got more of the carries. But they both
– Marcus Murphy? Yeah, it was Marcus Murphy.
Bingo. Thank you. So those guys both did well. So I like – dual running backs in college, more so than the pros. But I would expect that both these guys are going to be getting between or around 10 carries a game. I don't want to be a really pass-happy offense. I've got no issues with the spread whatsoever. I've got no issues with 400 yards passing a game. But I do love a good run game, as people do. And I think that with these guys, if you can get them around 10 carries a game, really 20 carries total between the two of them, I really think Mizzou is going to be set up for success.
I would totally agree. And you kind of go back in the Mizzou teams of old, and Henry Josie on the 2013 team, I want to say, didn't he have a counter as well?
Yeah, maybe that's what I'm thinking of with Hansbrough, or I don't know. I get all their names confused because Mizzou was very quietly.
All three of those guys played for 4 years, if I recall. Like, they all were here.
Right, and I want to say Josie was the one, I think, who, like, shattered his leg against Texas, and Mac Brown, like, ran over from the other sideline. A really nice moment there back in the Big 12 days. But, yeah, Mizzou has quietly produced some very plus running backs. You know what I'm saying? Like, above average, not necessarily NFL caliber,
right,
but guys who are going to have 14 carries a game for, like, 75 yards and maybe a TD as well. Quietly, very solid, dependable backs. And Mizzou's done that now, you know, for the better part of a decade.
Right, and that's another thing that Derek Dooley's going to have to figure out, is that they've done a really good job. I mean, you look at this offense, and you want to look at Drew Locke's tenure alone. He's had three OCs. He's had two head coaches, two athletic directors. I mean, there hasn't been any stability in the past 4 years. And for whatever reason, I really hope that there's a lot of good things happening the last 7 games of the season last year. It wasn't exactly what we expected, or, you know, like I said at the beginning when we called you, I kind of expected 8 wins last year, and in the most roundabout way, we scratched and clawed the 7. But going back to the run game is gonna you know, go over to Derek Dooley's offense, and I mean, hopefully it does. And another thing I wanted to ask with the coaching is, it's Barry Odom, who, you know, after, I want to say, week 5 or 6, it might have been after the Auburn game last year, where we just got absolutely demolished, picked apart, whatever, at home against Auburn. And almost at that point, everybody at the school had kind of had enough of Mizzou football. You know, Michael Porter Jr. is coming to play basketball for us. Let's just move on to basketball season.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Barry Odom had this really animated press conference after the game. We played it back, like, when we were at KCOU, and we talked about it at length. I just wanted to get your opinion on it. It feels like we're headed in the right direction as a program. 5-7, 4-8, 7-6 in the last 3 years, respectively. What do you think?
Right.
Is Barry Odom on the hot seat moving into year 4 here?
So the five and seven year, I don't even count.
Oh, the five. Oh, yeah. We can take out the 5-7 year just because, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
So you look at the last 3 years and you go 4-8. 7-6, and leaving a lot of meat on the bone in that 7-6 year. And now, and here's the thing, and this is where I struggle, and I'm glad you asked me about this with Barry Odom, is that, so yeah, so year 1, 4-8, year 2, 7-6, natural progression. Now he's got a loaded team. And it's like, okay, so he goes 8-4. I don't know about you guys. I would be happy. I think most people would be happy. They'll
right.
probably get a decent bowl game. They win that. Maybe they finish 23rd in the country at 9-4. That's great.
That's dream.
It could be, but then you step back and you look and you're like, okay, so that was the most talented quarterback in school history, maybe the most offensively gifted team in school history. If you want to talk about two running backs that good, Albert O, Nate Brown, Jonathan Joseph, Emmanuel Hall.
Most dynamic, maybe.
Right. Not to mention a finalist kid, if he comes back and he's healthy, like, from Oregon. Like, really, just an unbelievable number of weapons for one offense to have in college. And you guys went 9-4. Like, that's not – I don't – that leaves a bad taste in my mouth if that were to happen, if Mizzou fans are like, oh, that was awesome. And I could – for all I know, I could be doing it in 4 months. You know what I mean?
Right.
I just – every once in a while, I like to remove myself from being a Mizzou fan. One, because it makes me happy, and two, it's much easier to look at things objectively. And it's like, is 9-4 really, or 8-4, I should say, going into the postseason, really what we want for maybe, you know, one of the 3 or 4 best teams in Mizzou football history? Like, I don't know. It's hard to say. It is a tougher schedule this year. But
yeah.
I was talking with Alex Schiffer on my podcast about Barry Odom, and he was saying that he thinks 8 wins is going to get Barry an extension. And I'm sure he's probably right, but I'm saying, how much better do we think? And he would know. And I'm saying, how much better
is a roster going to get than the one he has right now in year three? I'm a big believer in no matter who the coach is, the situation is, year three, whether it be pros, college, YMCA, I don't give a shit. Year three, you should be, that is your year. That is when you should really be seeing significant changes in a program and within a team. And I just don't love the sound of 8-4 in his third year with maybe the best quarterback in the country and one of the best teams Mizzou's ever had.
Sure, sure. And I think 8-4, but one of those wins is against Georgia or Bama. Are you more satisfied then?
Right, and that's a great question because there's a way to look at this that goes hold on, let me pull up real quick. So there's a way to look at this that goes UT Martin win, Wyoming win, Purdue win, Memphis win, Kentucky win, Vanderbilt win, Tennessee win, Arkansas win. That's 8-4. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's like I don't think any of those wins are going to be that impressive. In fact, Mizzou is going to be favored by at least 3.5 in every single one of those games. So it's like, but that's a great counter. It's like, okay, like what if, you know, they beat Georgia? What if they have a Johnny Manziel moment down in Tuscaloosa? It's harder to say. Like I think, you know, just knowing what I know about Mizzou and about how these things work and where this program is nationally, I think that would buy Barry Odom a very long leash and get him a lot more time. But it's all very up in the air right now. I don't know how much stock you guys put into Jim Sterk not hiring Barry Odom. I don't know how much I put into it because I really don't know how Jim Sterk operates in a situation like that where a coach may or may not be struggling and it wasn't his hire. But if one of those wins is Georgia or Bama and they go 8-4, I think that's very different than the vanilla 8-4 that I laid out. And I think that is a significantly better year.
I like hearing, you know, there's some optimism that could be had with this season. You know, before you called in, our good friend Sam Dreyer, we had him call in to kind of test the equipment, make sure it all goes smooth and whatnot. And we have him on record saying 11 wins, we'll see you in Atlanta. So, yeah, exactly. My thoughts, exactly. KC, I know for a fact, in fact, I put all the money I have to my name on this. I know you saw the new basketball jerseys that they released today.
Oh, my God. Oh, God.
Oh, good Lord almighty, are they sexy.
They are so hot. Okay, but somebody put a little fly in my ointment. And so I've seen all these tweets and all the Instagrams and all this stuff. And then somebody just, I don't even know who it was, just a random person goes, are we not going to talk about the silver flame on the side of the shorts? And I was like, silver flame? Like, what are you talking about? There's no silver flame. And then I went back and looked. And, dude, it kind of like, I don't know, it kind of took the wind right out of my sails. Have you guys noticed the silver flame?
I'm looking.
I've seen the trimming on the side.
No, not the trimming. Trimming is amazing. But on the shorts, there's like an out of nowhere, makes no sense, doesn't go with anything, little discreet silver flame.
Interesting.
I'm telling you it's there. I'm not seeing things.
I'm finding it, though.
Interesting.
Well,
but okay,
regardless.
Regardless.
Yeah.
From the waist up, these jerseys are exceptional. And I thought that there was – I'm not some sort of designer, unfortunately. I wish I had that gift. I like to dress well, but I there's no way that in my wildest dreams could I have dreamt up something like these uniforms. I thought that there was capacity to grow aesthetically with these uniforms over the last couple of years, and I think that this is a tremendous step in the right direction. I mean, when you start talking about what those things are going to look like in an all-black scenario, oh, my God.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Like, they're really going to be great. That was the last thing I needed with the season still 70 days away is just
right.
That, like, tease of how great these guys are going to look when they come out on the floor. Something I want to say, though, about these uniforms, as much as I love them,
So they, and I thought, how cool is it that they had like a photo shoot in the tunnel on the way to Perot? What a great idea.
So badass.
Because of
that was
exactly
so cool. No, he really does. And, but one thing, so you've got Jeremiah Tillman out there who currently is 6'11 and somewhere between 265 and 270. He just looks awesome. You've got Geist out there. Geist has nice pythons on his arms. And then you've got, then you've got Jonte Sam Bradford Sleeves Porter out there. Highest body percentage fat at the combine. I love Jonte. I don't blame him for having a high percentage of body fat. Who knows the things that those kids are allowed to eat over at the Porter household? What I'm saying is you got KJ Santos, who looks like the son of Zeus, in your locker room.
Yeah.
And if for the uniform release, you're not going to have KJ out there? Come on now.
Yeah. I think he's kind of hiding, you know, the intimidation a little bit, because I saw KJ outside of Chipotle walking back from class today, and I'm just like, and I actually saw Drew, like, right in front of him. They were kind of walking together, and I was just like, oh, my word. That is a man right there. Like, we need some bodies. Like, you can look back at last year for the basketball team, like, pivoting real quick. Like, we need bodies. We just needed guys who could just ball and just – could go out there and be athletes. And we obviously, as the season went on and not having Mike obviously hurt us all year, but I think Kazo's just got something working right now, and he knows that, you know, he knows that football season's coming, and he knows he's got a back there, you know, and I think they actually have a decent relationship together. I really want to know more about, like, how they work together a little bit, but it was just a nice little, like, pearl that Kazo drops right before football season's like, hey, we're 70 days away. I just want to remind you guys that it's year two in Kazo Martin's program. I love it.
Right. I totally agree. I think to play 100% was to do it before football season got going. You don't need to take anything away from them or anything like that. I love Mizzou football. It is my football team without a doubt. But my primary focus in my ADD brain is always Mizzou basketball. And, a lot of people have really tempered their expectations for this year, and I have not at all. And I think KJ Santos, and here's a hot take for you. Here's your soundbite. I think KJ Santos has the potential to be a better version of Jordan Barnett, without a doubt.
Oh, my. Jordan Barnett is scrapping and clawing to make an NBA roster right now. Those are really big words, KJ.
Yeah, they are big words, but and Jordan Barnett tore my ass up in high school. He's an exceptional player, but he also cannot dribble. That is a fact. This kid cannot shoot off the dribble.
Yeah, a lot of guys.
I mean, he's a great 3-and-D option on an NBA roster. He's not going to have to do anything other than catch and shoot in the NBA. But like at the end of the day, like there was the number of times last year I'd see him have to make a decision with the ball in his hand, and it wasn't there. Right? So it's like, I think KJ is just a better individual scorer, and he's not as good of a shooter, for a fact, not as good of a shooter, but I think he can become a serviceable shooter somewhere in that 37% range from distance, and I've got really high expectations for him just on his own, and for this team next year, you're going to talk about, in my opinion, a top five forward tandem in the country, up there with Duke, Nevada, and Kentucky, Kansas. I mean, Jonte Porter and Jeremiah Tillman are going to be terrifying for opposing defenses next year.
Schmitty, and I know I'm really sending you around the map here. I've got you going in every direction, but I've never talked to you. I've never really met you. You know, we've obviously had a lot of conversations on Twitter and whatnot.
But you guys have never met?
Never met him. Never
true
met
story.
Him. So...
okay, that's my fault.
But you had a tweet last week that kind of caught my eye a little bit.
Oh, God.
And it is definitely worth mentioning because, you know what? I'll just read the tweet.
Oh, God.
HBO shows ranked.
Oh, God.
The Shop.
We should get to The Shop after this, though.
Only 5 minutes in and all ready to go. Now, truth be told, I'm yet to see it. It's absolutely on my queue. I watched Hard Knocks this week, so... I'm there, but I just haven't gotten to The Shop yet. Number two is The Night Of, three is Curb Your Enthusiasm, four is Sopranos, five is The Wire, and then somewhere way down the list is Thrones. There is a lot that I really like about this list, and there is one major, major flaw.
What the fuck do you have against Entourage, bro?
Oh, thank the Lord, Luke Donuts.
Okay, so I'm really glad you brought this up, because I didn't know how best to bring it up on TSP, so I'm glad you're bringing this up. So my point with that tweet, people are taking, I mean, I had texts, I had DMs, I had responses about this tweet.
So I saw 70%
of 70% of them taking me to the woodshed about Entourage. And to be honest with you, just real quick, Entourage did not even enter my head. Now, let me finish. What I was trying to do there was just put together a quick list of five shows. People took this list extremely seriously, despite the fact that my first ranking said, have only watched 5 minutes, already go. Only watched 5 minutes. That is how my list started. And people are like, well, this is now fact. This is all fact and has to be taken extremely seriously. And after I caught some heat, I said my two goals were, one, to praise The Shop, because The Shop, by the episode's conclusion, really was great. And two, was to talk shit on Game of Thrones, which I love to do, and I also love Game of Thrones, but I really like to shit on that show. And people totally missed my point and got mad at me about True Detective, got really mad at me about Entourage, got mad at me about lack of female representation on my list. And I'm like, guys, I spent 30 seconds on this tweet. Like, if you had not just read it back to me and you had been like, repeat to me what the list was in order, I would have said, okay, The Shop was on there and it was number one. And then I would have been like, Curb, Night Of. And then I would have just exactly what I just did. I kind of like blank. Like, I don't really, I think Sopranos and
Sopranos
one more. Sopranos Wire. It's like, I just wanted to put five words out there more than anything. So it could have been Veep. It could have been Entourage. It could have been True Detective. And I just put them together.
Right. Yeah.
And
the unfortunately,
people really just freaked out about it. Like, I low key got ratioed on that tweet. I had a ton of responses and very few retweets. I'm very self-conscious to the point where one of my best friends from high school, Nate Hagee, texted me out of blue and said, stop making yourself out to be the victim on Twitter. Which actually had me rolling. But I love Entourage. Love Entourage. I would love with you guys, with whoever, to at some point do like an actual like top 10 shows on HBO, because I put a lot more thought into it than
sure.
I did with that half-ass list.
And I think people just miss the comedic value of just you being like, The Shop,
five minutes
in.
It's in. Go.
And like, don't get me wrong, I love The Shop. I love everything it stood for. I love the idea of like letting these guys be unfiltered about everything. Like, just hearing LeBron curse was satisfying enough for me. Just like, because he's had an edited version of himself since 16 years old. Now he's 33, has a family, kids,
right,
and is practically ruining the world now. It's like, God, it's so nice to hear Odell Beckham and LeBron and Candace Parker and
I was happy to see John Stewart standing up, you know, for the white guy. Like, really representing the white
demographic. He's been bridging the gap. I've never been in a black barbershop. Have you been in a black barbershop?
Yeah.
You have?
Yeah.
Schmitty, how about you?
No.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't understand. Like, my aunt does my hair. She works in a salon. She's worked in a salon her entire life. I've been surrounded by women every time I go get a haircut. So, like, for me, it's a very feminine act for me. So,
sure,
to see the barber shop and just to see all those superstar athletes and multi-mogul figures come together and just really hang out and talk and drink and have a good time, like, LeBron's on to something, and for sure, I know that we're for sure going to have some sort of NBA podcast coming up in October or November with you, and we'll talk a little bit LeBron, because I know your takes
please
kind of rattled me up a little bit more when it comes to LBJ. We're going to finish off the last 2 minutes here. I think Bo had something, you had something to add.
Yeah,
okay, never mind. We could just go on all day. One thing I wanted to ask you is a more college football broad-based question.
Sure.
Who, outside of Georgia, Bama, Washington, Clemson, the teams, the top 10 teams that are normally there, Oklahoma, you know what I'm talking about. Is there a team in the teens to 20 range? Because if you look in the history now, like the team that makes it into the playoffs, one of those teams outside of Bama and Clemson and Ohio State normally come in from the 20s and teens and make a little bit of noise. And I just want just wondering if you have a team you're looking for in college football in general that you're going to keep an eye on this year.
Well, I feel bad because you kind of – well, you stole my Washington Huskies is what you did right there. But I mean, you're right. They're starting to get the accolades or recognition, not the accolades that sure. they deserve. I get my I get them confused with the Philadelphia coach. Is it Chris Peterson out there or is it Doug Peterson out there?
Yeah, it's Chris. Yeah, Doug's in Philly.
Chris, okay.
Chris came from Boise State. Yep.
Exactly. So anytime you look at a guy like Harbaugh, you look at, I hate to say his name, but Urban Piece of Shit Meyer, and you look at Peterson, it's like and you look at guys that come in, do wonders at a program, whether it be Stanford, whether it be Utah, or whether it be Boise State, and then go to the next place and continue to just ascend. You know what I mean? And I feel like
right.
he is getting – again, I'm not that in tune to college football in general. I don't hear a ton about the Washington Huskies. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
I just think he deserves a ton of credit for what he's doing at that school, because that was such an interesting move. I mean, you're talking about a guy who I would say is, when he left Boise State, he's kind of like the Greg Marshall at Wichita State, right? It's like this guy has had unbelievable
yeah.
success. It's like, where's he going to go? Where's he ultimately going to go? Which blue blood?
The mid-major guy who's got a lot of just momentum behind his name and could pick anywhere he wants to go. Kind of like Tom Herman when he came out of Ohio State and went to –
Exactly.
Texas.
Just like Tom
yeah.
Herman.
Yeah.
And so I see that he goes to Washington. It's like, dude, the world was your oyster. Why are you going to a team that – or a conference that has been – ruled by Stanford and USC for so long, and you're going to go to Washington? I just thought it was weird. And now here he is in the preseason top 10. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's not
– about pros, like left and right. He's got them contending every year. He's got a great quarterback that's going to be a good pro this year and a cannon of an arm. Like he's had a lot of talent. And it kind of goes back to what you were talking about when you talk about Barry O. Is Chris Peterson, when he got there, they just got continually better. They got better. They got better. They made the playoffs. I think it might have been the first year of its inception, I want to say. The Huskies made it, maybe the second. But I know they definitely made it. But he's just
yep.
gotten better and better. And now he's at kind of the stage of that program where NFL prospects that are, you know, high school guys that kind of look like they're NFL prospects, he brings them in at Washington, and then they go to the league and have still very long careers. I think he just sent Dante Pettis, the wide receiver, to the NFL last year, and he's had a multitude of cornerbacks that have been there as well. So you're absolutely right, and that's a very interesting pick, Washington out of the Pac-10.
Like 12, because of that. Yeah, and that didn't quite meet your criteria, and for that I apologize. But yeah, I'm big
totally
on Huskies out there at Washington, because anytime a coach can go to a program like that and have as much success as quickly as he had, I think it's one of the most impressive things a coach can do.
Totally.
Schmitty, I think we just cracked the 40-minute mark, so I think we're going to cut you off here. I was looking through your podcast, and it looks like you're a WWE fan a little bit.
Not as much as I once was, unfortunately,
yeah.
but I love the WWE.
Okay, I'm in a similar boat, so we're going to have another conversation at some point to talk about the WWE. You know, we'll save that for a later day. We want to thank you so much for calling
sure,
in.
Thank
this
you.
Collaboration was a blast. I hope
many more in the future, hopefully.
That is absolutely the hope. You can follow Daniel Schmidt at KingGoon450 on Twitter. You can follow his podcast at the TS Pod on Twitter as well. You can listen to him on iTunes and SoundCloud.
The finest St. Louis podcast. You heard it. He also self-proclaimed, but I would have to agree.
We know all too well about the self-proclaimed podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
We took a page out of your book there. Thanks for doing this, dude. We really appreciate it.
Guys, it was an absolute blast. I'm sure we'll do this again, either on my airwaves or yours again in the future. A lot of fun. Like I said, long time
longtime comment, and whether it be WWE or NBA or celebrating or MJ being LeBron depressed together about Mizzou, whatever it is, I'm in for it.
So that was Daniel Schmidt, King Goon of the Talking Schmidt podcast, who just called in and delivered a roller coaster of 45 minutes.
Wow. That flew by. Good God.
That was fun. He delivers, man.
Yeah.
And you, like we said, you can follow him on SoundCloud, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, TSP Pod.
It's nice having him because he can help out with PBB in Mizzou football. And PBB stands for pre-Bobby Buckets.
Okay.
So
yeah, no, like historical, like Sam Dreyer, our buddy, who basically is the one who kind of connected me with Schmitty when I first met him, which was actually at my house, which is kind of funny. Just like went up to him, said hello, and we kind of hit it off there. But and then, you know, you follow him on Twitter and we've become good friends, and then that's how you introduce. He does a thing, going back to the WWE thing real quick. He does a thing, and there's something in St. Louis. I forget what it's called, but he puts it on his Snapchat all the time. Maybe his Instagram as well. Okay. Where it's just like this low-level WWE like fan thing.
It's like wrestling. Sure. It's like amateur wrestling.
Yeah,
it's
literally amateur wrestling. Yeah. And he's like always got front row seats and he's got like 10 beers in his hand and he's just enjoying. And it's like it's awesome content. And I was like, God, you two need to go and just do that.
There's a very weird cult-like community for like the underground wrestling people.
Totally.
It's a really weird group of people.
Yeah.
But they're very passionate. They love their wrestling. And like,
it doesn't matter what lock of life you come from.
Yeah.
If you're a wrestling fan, you're a wrestling fan.
Well, you know, they say sports and music are the two greatest common denominators in the world, right? Like no matter where you go, there's sports. And no matter where you go, there's going to be music.
Right.
So, you know, and wrestling fits right in. It's just storytelling. It's like a soap opera.
Totally. I mean, we got everywhere on him. We got football. We hit up a little basketball action. I mean, I think that's going to be something we'll have a lot of fun with because he'll actually come down and see a bunch of games. And
you've been through 4 years now of Mizzou football.
Yeah.
I mean, that is crazy.
This will be year five, yeah.
Welcome to year five.
The fifth year.
Having gone through 4 years, what is a couple recipe ingredients to a perfect tailgate?
Whoa.
Like what has to be there if you're going to have the perfect tailgate? What has to happen?
Well, so it depends. So obviously I'm older now. I'm 22 years old.
Yeah.
When I first got into it was like fraternity life. Let's throw the most ridiculous
party
in the world and in the back of our fraternity. And we did, like, don't get me wrong. It was fun. But I think as I got older, what became more and more fun was the parking lot, you know, where the parents are tailgating.
Sure.
And, one of my good friends, Brian Hauser, his dad brings a massive RV and like a bunch of food and drinks. So I think rule number one, get somebody who's got an RV.
Rule number one, get someone with an RV.
Whoever's got the RV, load it up with all your favorite drinks, foods, liquors, doesn't matter. Load it up.
Okay, so what's the beer choice then on a game day?
For me personally? Yeah. Definitely not Natty Light.
all right. Dude.
I would say, I mean, I like to keep it simple. Like Busch Light's cool for me, Miller Lite.
Wow,
like I'm not trying to drink an IPA and watch football.
Sure.
I want to get down and like drink dirt almost.
Yeah.
You know
what I mean?
Busch Light isn't that, but you know, I just kind of grew up on it. But definitely I would say that an RV, someone who's just really good on the grill. Uncle Klaus, Uncle Teddy in Denver.
Oh, my Lord.
I remember our junior year when we obviously used to throw those tailgates at our house right off of, right on Providence and like right across the street from
Rest
the stadium.
In peace.
Yeah, RIP. But I remember 1 year we just had a bunch of patties that my mom brought like previous week. And we had a bunch of buns and everything. And my buddies were in town and everything. And Ted was like early in the morning firing up the grill. Our grill barely worked, hardly any propane in it, and Ted just made burgers for literally everybody in our backyard.
God, that's so
you gotta have a grill master.
Yeah,
that has to happen, and a bunch of TVs. Like that's the most important thing. It's just a bunch of TVs from literally the moment you wake up. Pop on the TVs.
Yeah, at our age,
and obviously speakers, music. Like
yeah.
I mean, for me, like we had a designated guy. On the aux cord.
How about, I mean, if you're talking about,
I need that guy too.
If you're talking about a perfect recipe, for or a recipe for the perfect tailgate. I mean, a Mizzou football win has to happen.
Of course.
You know, it's got to be a crazy night after the game.
Sure.
Leading up, I'm thinking, I'm a big bratwurst guy. That's my...
I love brats, too. I mean, we're Wisconsin kids at heart.
Come on now. That's where family's from. Come on now. My dad's soaking those sons of bitches in Pabst Blue Ribbon for 24 hours prior to putting it on the grill.
Absolutely.
You know, there's a little bit... it's got to have the right bun.
Yeah.
A hoagie bun, I think, is the preferred bun of choice.
Maybe just a little toasted.
Oh, yeah. A little bit toasted.
And then a little honey. I like spicy mustard. I like
sauerkraut.
Okay. I like sauerkraut.
I like sauerkraut a bit on my bratwurst.
Good Lord.
Yeah, I was just I'm getting all lamped up for college football now.
I know.
Oh my goodness! It's just goodness. Like
you, every single year for the past 4 years, I've wake up on the first Saturday game day. It's like just a beautiful moment because I cannot. It's ever since like you grow out of the Christmas phase of being a kid and you're just like Christmas morning. You find different mornings in your life.
Yeah.
That really get you going.
See, it's still Christmas for me, but it's not because of the presents.
Yeah.
It's because of the NBA. That's why I get excited about Christmas.
That could be someone else's morning. I'm sure there's a large demographic that would say the same about the first Sunday in the NFL that's coming up.
Yeah.
But for me, those just poor personally people. Growing up, there's we don't have to go there. But for me, just personally growing up, like waking up early in the morning at like 8 a.m. and seeing Kirk, Herbie, Reese Davis, Chris Fowler, and
I just want to see Lee
and Grandpa Lee Corso on the call.
The first time he puts on that mascot head,
and then anytime you just hear that beginning of coming to your
seat, yeah,
it literally gives me goosebumps right now. And I could you not a wake up Saturday and like. For some reason, like Ted, this is something funny story between Ted and I that I would always just do. I'd wake up every morning, and on a Saturday game day, and obviously we lived right on Providence Road, which is right across the street from the university, and it's literally within walking distance of the stadium. You can see it from our front lawn, and obviously people are parking to get tailgating early in the morning, and you know we'll wake up sometimes. People are already in our lot just tailgating. It's like we had a very open situation. It was a lot of fun for those 2 years, but I would just wake up and I just have so much energy right away. We don't need any coffee, don't need anything to get me going. I just wake up, run downstairs, go into Ted's room, run downstairs. Ted, it's getting, you know, ever seen the We Are Marshall with
I've seen We Are Marshall.
Yeah, in the scene where Matthew McConaughey's kid rocks in and there's like runs him out to get the newspaper. What day is it, son? Game day. What day? Game day.
God.
And then so Klaus and I every single year wake up, just open up the door and just let out a howl.
Matthew McConaughey, mid-2000s. Oh my goodness gracious.
It needs its own separate
podcast. Come on now.
Wrap things up real quick. I want to ask you a few actual questions here about Mizzou.
Okay.
Because we got Schmitty's thoughts, which are awesome.
Yeah, we did get Schmitty's thoughts. So what do you have in mind? What do you have in mind for me?
So what's the game for you that is going to be pivotal and for you to think that, okay, maybe we're going somewhere this season?
I mean, at Florida is crazy. At Florida is an absolutely absurd game. You know,
new coach.
Unfortunately... You know, as the fans of Mizzou, we're not going to be there to experience it. You know, obviously, unless you make the trip to Gainesville. But that game would tell us a whole lot about our season if we go to Florida and get a win. That's going to be late in the season. You know, it would probably be somewhat indicative of how the previous 8 games have gone.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. At Florida, you know.
That's the ending stretch right there.
That's the... I mean, we're not winning at Bama.
I would love to go into Purdue and just whip them around.
Well, starting 3-0 would really be cool.
Going into Georgia, they're coming home to play Georgia. The 20s.
To your city.
Columbia will be hopping because I remember my freshman year. You mentioned. I mean, I haven't been
PBB.
I haven't really been this excited for Mizzou football since my freshman year. And my freshman year, I didn't know what I had. The year before in 2013, they make it to the SEC title game with that great team that they had and nearly almost made it to the last year of the BCS title game. But there was so much hype around Matty Mauk and Russell Hansbrough that we talked to Marcus Murphy. Shane Ray was there and he got drafted the following year. And Marcus Golden, who's now on the Cardinals, that was a great defense as well. But I remember when Georgia came to town, Todd Gurley. who's out. Chubb, and it was a big game. It was Mocktober at the time. Now it's Locktober for us, but it was Mocktober at the time. We were all really excited. Tailgates were insane. There were Georgia fans everywhere. It was a blast leading up to that game. And I saw that game. I was at that game.
Wow.
We lost 34-0.
Wow.
And it was an absolute beatdown. And I lived from that moment. I was just like, oh my gosh.
So I mentioned to you.
And so now, to wrap it up, like this year we'll play Georgia and Bama again. That year we play Georgia and Bama. So it really feels full circle for me.
Okay.
And I think if we scratch and claw out of the SEC somehow, like that is the peak right there.
I think
that is the highest expectation you had. But for me personally, like I have, unfortunately, being here for 4 years, like have a unfortunate pessimism always just nagging me in the
makes
side.
Sense.
That, like,
makes sense.
This could just go horribly.
In San Diego, there's a similar vibe or confidence with sports as a whole.
Sports,
you know, it's
okay.
Really like the Aztecs for football. It's like, oh, you know, they'll be good. But they're still in San Diego. They're still the ass.
Fan bases can easily fall into that trap.
It's terrible.
And it sucks. But you, like last year, I remember when we were on the air, happy 1 year anniversary, by the way.
Oh my goodness. We didn't even bring it up yet.
But where was my train of thought? I lost it for a second.
It happens. We were discussing culture. We, you know,
yeah,
San Diego loses.
Totally. It's just like we were pleading everybody for patience last year. Like maybe we can turn around. And we did. This is a long season, but I really want to get off to a fast start just because those are good signs of teams, of good teams is what I meant to say. It's a good sign is that if you can start off hot, hit people in the mouth, and then go into the big games after beating the teams you should beat, like Purdue, like Wyoming, like UT Martin, like Memphis, and you go into those SEC conference games ready to play.
There's a lot of winnable games on the schedule. I've
been looking at it for an hour now.
And it
just keeps getting better and better outside of Georgia and Bama. And like...
You know what? Screw it. 11 wins. We'll see you in Atlanta.
11 wins. We'll see you in Atlanta.
God damn it. That's
Thank
a beautiful
you, Sam
quote.
Drag.
Just toss it in for another yeah. round of that quote for
sure.
me. I need to hear that over and over.
Why don't we talk a little
Go
bit?
Go ahead.
What do you got? Can you give us your preview, Sam Dryer?
Projected season.
All I know is that Watson and Heisman were winning 11 games and the best championship.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know, man.
This might be a good, you know, good ending point right
this
here.
This might be a good ending party right here.
You want to take us home?
The moment I said, screw it, 11 wins, I'll see you in Atlanta,
exactly.
I knew it was over.
Take us home, Bo.
Okay, so this was our first guest that we've had on the Iconic Podcast.
Yeah, Danish. We're gonna have to get the boss to send him a few shirts for sure.
Yeah, we can make that happen.
Definitely, easily.
Speaking of new shirts.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. In the mail right now.
Yeah.
Coming to Como. They're on their way. They're on their way right now. We're going to be wearing those new ones. We'll be promoting them. We'll let you know when they are available. I think, you know, we'll have some people looking really good in them on Instagram and whatnot. But, yes, we had Daniel Schmidt on, and it was a blast. And he's a former Mizzou student. Dome Ask knows him. I had never met the kid, so this was a really fun experience. You know, I've talked to him plenty on Twitter. We had plenty of good battles and run-ins there, but it was good to finally talk to him and talk Mizzou football, get a little different perspective that I can't necessarily provide. That PBB, pre-Bobby Buckets, is a generation that I can't really talk about. But he can, so it was nice having him on. We broke down the schedule. We talked about the new basketball uniforms that are, oh, so sexy.
Mm.
We got to talk, you know, Locke returns, Crockett, Roundtree. How does that matchup work out? Emmanuel Hall is coming back at wide receiver. On the defensive side, there's some question marks.
Definitely.
Still.
Outside of the defensive line, for sure.
Yeah, you know, I don't think Mizzou D-line, you know, D-line Zoo is ever going to leave. You know, as long as that tradition of having great line play on the defensive side stays, we'll be okay there. But the youth that Schmitty talked about in that secondary is a little bit of a concern. We got to break down a little bit of HBO in a weird turn of events. We really covered a lot of ground in that 40 minutes. We got to get Schmitty's top five HBO shows. which was interesting. He had the shop at number one, and that was only 5 minutes in. I think it was a little bit of humor,
that no one seemed to pick up on
or cared,
right?
Because they were just upset with 2 through 5. It sounded like, and then Luke and I got to talk on our own earlier this week. I got to record a solo MMA fight game boxing type podcast.
We can put that out whenever.
That we're gonna post here really, really soon. You know, it's just 20 minutes of really just me. Talking
the fight,
fight world. Yeah. And
something
everything
we're going to do sooner or later into the future.
Yeah, and we got to take some videos, and we're kind of getting accustomed to the new setup here, but it's really, really going well. New shirt coming, videos coming this week, 2 podcasts within a week of each other.
Mizzou football Saturday.
Mizzou football in 2 days.
Coming to your city.
Oh, my God.
Take us home.
That is absolutely beautiful. Another fantastic episode of the Iconic Podcast. Happy 1 year, brother.
Let's go home! Let's go home, ladies and gentlemen! Let's go home! Make a clap to this.